Please don't fear me, because I know what I want. Please deliver me, that's not part of your soul. It makes you freeze time, staring in at yourself. It's time to step outside onto the path you once made.
Wago, and I forgot and just snapped it on my head. So how are you doing today?
I'm doing pretty good. I've had a nice quiet weekend so far with my husband, and that's been great because last couple of weekends I've been busy performing, so it's nice being able to like catch up on chores and stuff.
If we want to start off, you want to give yourself a little bit of an introduction and stuff?
Absolutely. I am Jen Olivier. I am an office manager by day and an actor, singer, and voiceover artist by night and weekend.
So I know you're part of a group, right? A singing group?
Yeah, I sort of. I do all sorts of things. I am in a classic rock cover band, and so we play quite a bit, mostly at bars, street fairs, weddings, festivals, birthdays, and we play mostly classic rock tunes, some modern stuff. And then I just finished up the presidency of a club called the Radio Enthusiasts of Puget Sound, and it's an old-time radio group that's dedicated to preserving and educating the public about the golden age of radio. And so with them, I do voice acting and some singing, too.
Oh, that's really cool. I've been getting more into doing audio stories of late and stuff also, so I'm really enjoying it, like the audio format.
Yeah, and it's pretty popular now that podcasting is so easy to do. Once a month go over to a friend's house and record introductions for a podcast called Reps Presents. And I don't write the copy or anything. I just do the voiceover recording, but it's a weekly podcast that replays some old time radio shows and some new ones as well that members of our club write. So I help introduce those and provide little commentary on them.
Are you a fan of old-time radio?
I am. I started doing old-time radio like in 96 when I was 16, and I loved it because I discovered that even though I am not necessarily a physically attractive person, I could still play like the roles that I normally wouldn't be able to on stage, like the ingenue and the, you know, the pretty girlfriend or whatever. But because I can do so many different types of voices, I could play multiple characters in one show. So I got interested in the format and then began to learn about old time radio and some of the classic shows.
I remember this was years ago, but you know the show Prairie Home Companion?
Of course, yeah.
Me and a friend of mine went and seen, I think it was one of the last ones a lot of the cast did, like mm-hmm. lot of the main cast, and I just loved that. Now, ever since then, I've been like, I want to do a lot of audio stuff.
That's fantastic. Yeah, Garrison Keillor, oh my God, he had such an amazing voice and the ability to tell stories. And then the fact that they're so portable, you know, being able to listen to them anytime on your phone, in the car, whatnot. And kind of like audiobooks, which I've recorded a couple of audiobooks as well, but that is a tedious process. That's a difficult thing to do, but Yeah, audio entertainment is great. As a voiceover artist, I am all for it.
Yeah, I'm having some of my older books adapted to audio, and I don't know why I'd never thought of this before, but the people were telling me, like, oh, we're recording almost line by line.
Uh-huh.
And I was like, oh, that's a lot of work.
It is. It is a lot of work. I've recorded two different audiobooks, and not even in their entirety. I only provided the audio for sections of these books, and doing the recording, re-recording any mistakes, doing all of the editing, it takes me about an hour to lay down about 10 minutes worth of actual complete work.
Have you did a lot of audio drama or just audio narration of a book?
I have done less narration of books because that stuff is difficult and it's a pain in the butt. I have done a ton of audio drama. That's actually what I was doing last weekend. I was in Las Vegas at the SpurgeVac convention, doing old time radio, and it was actually broadcast or streamed live online. And I got to work with some fantastic actors. I felt so blessed. Tony Dow from Leave It to Beaver was there. Paul Peterson from The Donna Reed Show was there. Richard Hurd, an amazing actor. He was on Seinfeld, I guess, and several other shows. I recognized him from Star Trek. Wow, it was amazing to work with him. Plus tons of other actors who have done old time radio since they were children, like Beverly Washburn. She was in the movie Old Yeller. She used to do a lot of radio as a child. Tommy Cook, Stuffy Singer, and his daughter Camden Singer. My mom was there as well, and she directed a show that I starred in called The Thin Man. So we did a recreation of the radio show that aired in like 1947, I think was the year. Adapted from the book that was based on the movie The Thin Man, and that was a lot of fun. It was that show alone was almost an hour long.
Oh. And you talked about earlier about some of the benefits of audio of playing different characters and different types of characters. Can you think of any of the disadvantage between like audio and like a live version of a play or a movie or anything?
I would say the biggest disadvantage when you're doing audio theater or old time radio, audio drama, generally you get one table read rehearsal, maybe one technical rehearsal, and then poof, you're on. In a way, it's good, but in a way, it can be bad because you don't really have a chance to try different things and explore the character and really get to know it. Also, movement when you're acting can be very important in imparting different emotions into your voice. And when you're on stage, you're you know, you have the whole space to move around and look at the other actor and really be intimate with them when you're acting. Doing audio drama, you're generally standing up at a microphone. There's a little bit of movement involved, but you don't want to move so much that you have jewelry that's jangling around or that you whack the microphone or something. You need to keep your mouth, you know, right there by the microphone. You need to be listening to making sure there's no feedback. And there's a lot of technicality that's involved using mic technique. So that kind of pulls you out of the acting aspect of it a little bit, trying to just lay down good, clear audio. And you're not looking directly at your other actors. There's a row of microphones along the edge of a stage, so they could be anywhere in that row. They could be all the way down at the end, and you're at the other end, and you're not making eye contact with them because you're both, you know, got your nose in the script. So that whole exchange of energy is lost a little bit. So I would say that would be kind of the disadvantage. But other than that, I love being able to do it. There's no memorization involved. That part is the best.
Yeah. What did you first do? Like, did you do stage stuff, or was it like singing, or what was your first contact with like entertainment?
I started off in TV commercials actually when I was 6 years old. So that was back in 1986. So I've been doing this for over 30 years now. My mother worked at a television station, a small little station in Northern California, as a production assistant, and occasionally they would need you know, they'd be making local commercials and they would need a cute little kid to come in and say a couple lines or jump up and down in the backseat of a car, eat some ice cream or something like that. And my mom would say, oh, hey, I got a cute little kid. And she would toss me in there. And I don't even think I got paid for any of that stuff. If I did, it went to mom. But I think she's mentioned that most of that was she didn't get any money off of me. But I was about 6 years old when I first got the acting bug. I didn't start singing. My first live performance was, I think I was 11. I sang in a talent show. And then I joined choir in high school and that sort of thing. I started doing musical theater and then community theater when I was about 15 years old.
Do you have a favorite thing or do you like just doing them all?
I kind of like doing them all because they're so different in each thing that you do. I love singing with a band and singing blues and classic rock music, but that style is very different than doing musical theater or doing, and I miss doing choir. I haven't done choir in a while. When I was 17, I toured Italy with a small choir for about 2 weeks and sang in all these different cathedrals throughout Rome and southern Italy and Sicily. And that is, again, a completely different style of singing. It's generally a cappella. You have all these different voices together, all harmonizing. But I do really, really love doing musical theater because it's generally so campy, so over the top. It's like being in a live action cartoon and, you know, there's often dancing involved, which I'm not the greatest dancer, but I can get around a bit. The last musical I did was the Rocky Horror Show at the Renton Civic Theater. Oh my, it was so much fun. I just had a blast being a part of that production.
Oh, cool. So of the different places you've been, do you think that's influenced your work too, as well as the different things you've done, the different type of things?
That's, yeah, probably. And I think also the different people in my life has influenced the work or the things that I enjoy doing. Cause I'll do anything from jazz, old time. I do prefer the older art forms. I don't do a lot of modern music or art forms. And I've lived in Florida, I've lived in California and Texas, Nebraska, but I live in Washington State now, which I love. So I think maybe it has influenced some of my work a little bit, but I prefer older art forms and I prefer doing other people's work. I still consider myself an artist, even though I don't create new content per se. I'm a word interpreter. I take scripts, I take songs that are already written and perform them for people. And that's still an art form in itself, even though I don't write my own songs. I don't really write plays or even the copy that I read for commercials or whatnot. I don't write any of that stuff.
Yeah, I know myself, there's musicians I like who don't write anything, but you can, they must be very well at picking material because, like, mm-hmm. You can see that they're picking a lot more better material than other people are. So, like, I think that's a good thing. Like you said, interpreting material or something like that. That's a talent in itself.
Yeah, definitely. And with my classic rock band, we're called UC7. There's six of us, even though there's not seven of us, but there's six of us. But we've got a keyboard player, a drummer, two guitar players, and a bass player, and then myself. And I also play a harmonica and very, very rarely saxophone, but I do a majority of the singing. And we try to pick our tunes based on stuff that sounds good that our band can do. Like right now we're working on Hold the Line by Toto, and that is totally a good UC7 song because you got piano in there, you got balls to the wall, guitar playing, plus it's a good dancey tune. And so that is a lot of what we do. People hire us to have a good time and to dance. So we put our set lists together very thoughtfully to make sure people are enjoying a goodly amount of dancing and go, oh, hey, I know that one. Oh, my God, I know that one. You know, we try not to pick too many obscure ones. We'll toss one in every now and then that we enjoy playing, but maybe that the audience doesn't know. And then we try to throw a slow one in every now and then as well so that they get a chance to have a little bit of a slow dance. And that's basically how we kind of pick our tunes. We base it on just past experience and knowing what the customers want, you know.
Yeah. I think it's interesting when some people look at that you have to create something to be like an artist. Like you have to create it from whole, which I don't agree with, because most entertainment is not done by the person who creates the content per se. Like most acting, most directing and stuff is like, there's very few people actually creating the content compared to how many people are doing, helping create the overall thing.
Yeah, that's exactly right. I mean, you still call Meryl Streep an artist, but she doesn't write any of the words that come out of her mouth.
Yeah, and like, you've done stage work. How many people goes into a stage play? Like, you don't think about how many people backstage make stuff, even from effects, practical effects making stuff is really important.
Exactly. I'm a talent. I'm an actor. That's what they call us in the business, a talent. My husband, he is a stagehand. He's actually even busier than I am because he's an audio engineer. He's just a general stagehand. He does lighting. He'll run spotlight, anything that you need. And those guys, the ones in black hiding in the shadows, they are there hours before any of the actors show up, and they leave way after they go home. And they work twice as hard, and they don't get the credit and the applause and all of that. But they're all necessary. The people that design the costumes and do the lighting, and even just the stage manager who calls the shots in the show, all come together to create this piece of art, not just the person standing on stage. And I'm also a very strong believer in being true to the text. Even though the writer might not be there in the theater, him or herself, they were just as integral in making that production. And I get a little irritated when people want to go, oh, that line doesn't make very much sense, let's change it or let's cut it or something like that, because that's not being true to their work that they put in of writing those words and that they put in very purposefully. So I think as an actor, as an artist, if a line doesn't work, you need to figure out how to make it work because the writer put it there with intention.
Yeah, I worked backstage, like when I lived in Vancouver, not far from you, really.
Oh, yeah, right on.
Yeah, I lived in Vancouver, Canada, for a little while. I took part in the fringe festivals they have up there, which Canada has quite a few of them. And I worked backstage, and we would move sometimes. We'd perform like maybe three times in a week, one play, but we do it on different stages. And if you go to a stage that doesn't have an area set up for like any kind of simple effects, even, it's totally different. Like it falls flat on people if you don't have that. So it's all like very, very important to a stage play. Have you did much of the backstage work yourself?
I actually did. When I first started off, when I was 15 and doing community theater, I've done lights, I've done sound. I love doing assistant stage managing, being backstage on headset, because that's pretty close to being on stage. You're just off in the wings and usually managing props and stuff. The only thing backstage that I haven't done is costumes, because I suck at sewing. I am miserable at it. But everything else I've had a hand in, which I think is important as an actor being on stage, to remember everything that it takes and being kind to the people that work backstage, because I've seen actors who are not, and they're not very sympathetic. They think they're the most important thing that's out there, and it's really, really too bad. So I think it's important to have a hand in all aspects of putting a production on.
Yeah, I agree. Like when you were talking about changing lines and stuff, I remember when I'd have a headset on that was basically connected to the stage manager's headset, and you know, you hear the cues and stuff, like this has to happen here, and if somebody's not paying attention on stage or says the wrong thing on stage, that can throw everything off.
It can throw everything off because the stage manager's up in the booth and they're following along the script, and they've got their cues that are written to, you know, cue the lighting guy or cue the sound guy, saying, you know, get ready, sound cue 43. And he goes, okay, standing by. And then an actor like blows right past it, like, whoa, that could completely screw things up. So, you need to know your stuff. Don't skip lines, be true to the text, but also, it can affect a lot of different things if everybody's not following along on the same page.
I was surprised when I first did it, because I didn't know much about stage work until I did it, how chaotic and really a finely tuned chaos backstage can be at a
show. Yeah.
Yeah, it's really interesting. I remember there was a Canadian TV show, I can't remember the name of it for life of me, that was about doing Shakespeare plays.
Mm-hmm.
I can't remember what it was. It had the guy from that Due South show in Canada, too. But, like, it was it really interesting. It goes into, like, that backstage chaos that even a very well-run show is on a fine line of just collapsing sometimes.
Yes. Yeah, there was a great documentary on, I think it was on Netflix, called... Oh, my husband's in the other room. I would ask him or he would totally remember. It's called like Into the Ring Cycle or something like that. And it's all about these stagehands behind the scenes running this opera. And you see very little of what's actually happening on stage. You're seeing everything that's going on backstage is like, you know, huge pieces of the set are flying up and down and costumes running in and out and makeup and actors. And, you know, that little piece of what's happening on stage is just like the tiny tip of the iceberg of everything that's running around behind the scenes just to make that little bit happen.
Yeah. I just remembered the name of the show. It's called Slings and Arrows.
Oh, yes, yes, yes. Oh, that was a great show.
Yeah, it was a really good show, and it, like, goes into some of that, like, all the aspects of a stage play and such. Have you ever did any film work?
I have done some student films when my mom was going to, was it FMU? When we were in Florida, I worked on some short films with her, and I think when I was in high school, I helped out with a little bit of films, but oh my God, it's tedious. And first of all, I am not even remotely slender enough to be on television. You have to be like a size -0, because I mean, it flattens your image out and puts like 20 pounds on. So you do got to be teeny tiny. And the other part of it is, oh man, it is tedious. I mean, I'm talking about how tedious doing audiobooks are. Doing film work is 30 times more tedious because as an actor, you learn a little bit of lines and then you sit and wait and wait while the film gets loaded and the crew gets the camera set up and all the lighting, and then the light needs to be tested, and then the sound, and then the sound person coming through, and then you go in and you do your like 2 minutes worth of dialogue and then go sit some more and wait another hour while they move the camera again and reset everything. And it's all broken up into different pieces, so you know you're not doing everything linearly. I don't care for it. Plus I feel very strange in front of a camera, even though I started off doing commercial work as a child. The camera just like feels like it's sucking my soul out. And there's no feedback at all because everybody has to be absolutely silent on set. So I do so much better in front of a live audience, a large audience, like give me that energy to feed off of people laughing and clapping. And then I'm in my element, and I much prefer that.
Do you like the live feedback a lot from the audience?
Oh, yeah. It's like a natural high. I love it. Being able to have them in the palm of my hands, whether I'm doing a stage play that's a drama where, you know, I can hear everybody sniveling and crying, or, you know, being able to nail that perfect joke and get them to laugh, or you're singing and everybody's clapping along. That's my favorite. I love that.
How do you handle negative responses from audiences?
I am trying to recall that. I don't think I have.
You've never had one?
I don't think I've ever been heckled. The only thing I can think of is there's been a few times playing with my band in a bar where the people in there obviously did not want to be listening to a band while they're eating their dinner. And that can be a little embarrassing. So you just keep going. I've had embarrassing things happen where I've had like my costume fall down, but that you just keep going, you know, that part doesn't bother you. But I can't think of a direct negative response that I have ever gotten while on stage. I have had somebody go into a seizure and the show had to be stopped while the 911 was called. That was pretty intense, but she was okay. She turned out to be okay and then came back and saw the rest of the shows. I think the theater gave her like tickets for life or something, like, but that was pretty intense.
Do you, when you did theater work and other work like that, did you ever do improv work?
I did. I was a part of a troupe called the Improbable Improv Ensemble, and you would probably be surprised to find out how much preparation goes into improv. You practice a lot. You practice many different types of scenarios. And in order to do improv well, you really need to know where your fellow actors are going to take something so that you can anticipate where this is going. And you always want to say yes to whatever they bring in to the situation. So I have done a little bit of improvisational work, and that's kind of fun too. It's pretty intense.
Yeah, me and some friends are going to an audio improv charity event later in the year.
Interesting.
And it's basically going to be an improv story, but we're going to hit, have certain points you need to get to or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm excited about it, but I'm also, terrified of it, because with any improv, you got to also give out a lot of the control to the other person.
Yeah, it can be a little scary because you don't know where that train is going. But it can be fun and interesting as well and surprising. But that as an audio thing sounds kind of interesting.
Yeah, we're talking about doing I don't know if you ever seen it. A friend of mine's did this before, a 24-hour audio project for charity.
Mm-hmm.
And we're basically going to do that, but then have people jump in the story instead of just having guests. They're going to jump in the story and out of the story as it goes on during the night. I haven't got everything worked out of how I'm going to do it completely, but I'm still working on it to see what, but it's something I'm excited about doing.
That sounds really cool.
Yeah. I usually ask some questions that are questions you should never ask an artist in any way.
Okay.
So one of them, there'll be 4 or 5 questions.
Okay.
And one of them is along the lines of, how's your hobby going?
As in, oh, God.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. First of all, yeah, I can see how that's slightly offensive, just calling it a hobby. I consider it a second job. I work part-time as a office manager, enough to pay the bills and to give me health care, but not enough to make me comfortable so that it keeps me a little hungry, because when I go out and I perform, I expect to get paid for it. It's not a lot. It's not enough to live off of, but I every time I open my mouth, I get some money. So it comes in fits and spurts, and I'm always finding things in different outlets. But I've been doing it for many, many, many years now, and it seems to be going all right. I don't think it's ever going to pay the bills full time, and I'm okay with that.
Yeah, I think it's one of the things people think. You either have to make a lot of money at any kind of artistic endeavor, or just don't do it.
That's silly. Although my husband's pretty lucky. He's a stagehand and audio engineer full time, and he makes more money than I do at my office job doing that. So he is pretty lucky that way. But in the form of my voice talent, I could possibly do it living full time if I wanted to take that leap and really, really, really work at it and get an agent and all that. But I don't know. Doing it part time is a good balance for me. So it works out okay.
My second question is, when people say you should do something for exposure, basically for free.
Okay. Admittedly, the convention that I did last weekend, I paid for my own hotel and my own flight down there, and I did not get any compensation for that. I did mostly do that for not only the exposure, but dude, Tony Dow, he's Wally and Leave It to Beaver. This was my third, I think, convention with him. So, just being able to walk up to him and have him go, "Hi, Jen," and give me a hug. Okay, that's pretty worth it.
Yeah, but also there's a difference between you choosing to do something for free than somebody saying you should always do it for free.
No. We do get a lot of, for my band, people want us to come and play for their charity for exposure or for free. And it's what they don't understand is it's not just the playing that they're paying for. It's the fact that we get together 2.5 hours every week to rehearse these songs. So we got them down pat. We know them really well. We have a huge amount of sound equipment that we have to bring in. It takes us about 2 hours to load in the soundboard, the subwoofers, the speakers. We bring stage lights. That alone, loading up the trucks, driving it there, unloading the trucks, setting all that stuff up, miles, well, not miles, but hundreds of feet of microphone cable that we have to plug in and all these microphones and stuff. And then we haven't even actually started work yet. Now they want us to play music for 3 or 4 hours. And we've already been working for over 3 hours. So there is a little bit of a disconnect sometimes when we're quoting to people a job. And they're like, oh my God, that's so high. Why don't you just come and play for exposure? And we're like, dude, you don't understand. This is actually really hard work.
Yeah, it's like a friend of mine told me a long time ago when I was trying to figure out what to price like ebooks at. And he told me, he's like, price it at whatever effort you think you put into it. Because that's what it's worth. Like, if people don't pay for it, they don't have to pay for it. But you can say, like, this is what I'm worth. This is what I put into it. It's up to you whether you want to pay for it or not.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Do you find any... that any of the arts are more accepting of, art crowds, what I'm trying to say is, like, do you know any the art crowds that seem to be more supportive, whether it's musical crowds or stage crowds? Which one do you like the best, you think, when it comes to just the audience?
When it comes to the audience, it depends. When I'm playing with my band, at least half the time the audience is drunk. So that really helps because they think we sound awesome. But I've noticed with the old time radio group, the people that really, really love that art form, we also take small performances to retirement homes and assisted living facilities where some of these people don't even have a chance to get out of the building on their own very often. And just to see the sparkle in their eyes, you can tell that, like, doing these old Fibber McGee and Molly shows or Great Gildersleeve shows or Burns and Allen just flashback these memories to them of being little children and coming home from school and putting their play clothes on and getting their little glass of milk and toast and laying down in front of the big glowing radio in the living room and listening to their favorite, you know, Gunsmoke shows. So those audiences are extremely grateful. And people who are sight impaired love old time radio, which, of course, that makes perfect sense. So their enthusiasm is infectious.
Yeah, I'm getting into, like, my job, I'm a cook, and I listen to podcasts or audiobooks all day long, and lately I've been listening to old radio shows, even like the Burns and Allen show, which I think...
love.
Yeah, I just love them. Their chemistry is so good together.
I actually have a friend who helped get me involved in the Radio Enthusiast of Puget Sound. He does a great George Burns, and I do a wonderful Gracie Allen. So him and I together will pair up and recreate some of those shows at various places. And when he does it, he even puts his suit on and he gets a cigar, and the patter together is so much fun. And I try to recreate Gracie's voice as best as I can as well. So I'm really good at mimicking voices. That's why I'm great at doing the classic rock cover band thing, because I do try to mimic the voices of the songs that I'm singing. But with the old time radio stuff, I do a lot of Gracie Allen, Baby Snooks. I'm pretty well known for doing my Baby Snooks. Any kids or animal sounds, I do lots of dogs, cats. Pretty well known for that. But Burns and Allen is a really good one. They're so funny.
Yeah, I watched that TV show when I was little also. I'm a big fan of really old TV shows like Burns and Allen. I love the Many Lives of Dobie Gillis, this old show. I liked a lot of shows like that. But I also loved the old radio stuff like The Shadow and stuff like that. There was just so many, those voices, and even like today with Welcome to Night Vale, which I enjoy a lot. I don't know if you've listened to that at all, but Welcome to Night Vale. I have not. Yeah, Welcome to Night Vale, which is a podcast radio drama, and it's basically done as a radio like DJ announcer is doing almost like the minutes and talking about the stuff happening in the community in this really odd community and stuff. And and the voice actor who does it is so good in it and stuff. So I'd recommend that if you should check that out. It's really good. Welcome to Night Vale. That's what it's called.
Welcome to Night Vale. Okay, and then I have a recommendation for you. If you're really enjoying that stuff, I recommend checking out Imagination Theater. They have a whole bunch of shows. I get to work with Larry Albert pretty frequently, and they have done, I think, every single Sherlock Holmes story in the entire canon. Plus they have a bunch of other great, I think they mostly deal in mysteries. But check out Imagination Theater. That's here locally in Seattle. And Larry Albert is a fantastic stage actor and voiceover artist and a nice guy too. So you might like some of his, stuff as well. And it's new. They don't call it old time radio. They call it live cast audio drama.
Yeah, I'll have to check that out. Like, I've always been a huge Sherlock Holmes fan. Like, I have one of those huge editions with the original illustrations in it.
Yeah.
And I think I got them all on audio, maybe a couple of different times. So, like, I've always been a fan of those stuff, so I'll have to check some of that out. One of the things I think I find interesting about people who can do, like, jump into different medias and stuff is a lot of people think you're unfocused when you do that, but I find that focuses me more than if I had one thing in front of me, I'm just going to just stare at that.
Yeah.
Do you find that similar to you?
A little bit. I say that I am an actor, singer, and voiceover artist, but I have discovered that trying to have projects in all three of those branches going at once is pretty difficult and wears me out pretty quick. So I can manage two at once. So whether I'm doing some sort of voiceover, voice acting work and a stage play, I can manage that, or singing with the band and doing a stage play, I can manage that. But I have had points where I've tried to do all three at once plus my day job, and then I end up all of them start to suffer a little bit because I can't keep up and it's too much energy. So out of the three, I can successfully do two at once, but I just keep rotating them. So I just finished up doing 2 years as president of the Radio Enthusiasts, and I've told them that I'm kind of putting that aside a little bit for now because I miss theater so much. The last play I did was in 2014, and for me, oh my God, that's way too long to go without doing a stage play. So now I want to focus back on that again. And then my band, I've been with them since 2010. And like I said, we rehearse every week, 2.5 hours, and then we have gigs at least once or twice a month, but especially in the summertime, we're playing almost every weekend. Plus, I'm just a voice for hire for anything. If I've done PBX phone systems, like the press one for sales, but, you know, press. I've been hired to do those things before, or singing at people's funerals. I will sing anything. Doesn't matter what the religion, you know, I've sung at Catholic wakes. It doesn't matter. Like, you pay me money, I will sing you the most wholehearted Ave Maria you have ever heard. that's what I do. You want a voice, I give you a voice. You give me money, I'll sing you anything. Except for maybe, you know, like hate speech or anything that's going to be down on anybody. I'm not going to do that, but I'm pretty open to what I'll perform.
Do you have somewhere if people would want to contact you to maybe hire you for that? You would like for them to?
You know, I should, and I don't necessarily. I usually hand out my card if I'm talking to people. I do have a website, theredheaddiva.com, but I don't keep it up as often as I should. My band has a website, but I usually send them to the Gigmaster site or to Facebook. People also contact me through Facebook, or often just a friend of a friend will like say, hey, I heard so-and-so needs something, give them a call or whatnot. So word of mouth quite often, but you know, I probably should put a little more time and effort into my website to have people go there and click hire Jen now, have her say whatever you want.
Yeah, I know, like, I'm looking to hire some voice acting people soon, so maybe I'll send you a note.
Yeah, exactly. Send me a note, or if you need a guy, I know a great guy I can send you to. Him and I actually banter back and forth together really, really well. You hire the pair of us, you know, whatever. I got people. I can send you people, or, yeah, contact me.
Do you have websites overall that you would like to promote, or is it just your main one?
Just my main one, theredheaddiva.com. I don't even have, like, an artist Facebook site for myself. I've considered it, but I'm not, like, famous or enough or well known enough to have like a Jen Olivier, the artist Facebook page, even though I probably should, but I do have one for my band. And
I tried to have separate sites for stuff, and it was just more for me to keep up with.
yeah, exactly. That's what like is running through my head right now. Like, wait, if I did one for voiceover, but then one for singing, but then wait a minute, okay, that's too confusing. I don't know. No, but you have given me something to think about. I think I should probably on my website promote myself a little bit better.
Well, I know, like you was talking about, audio medium seems to be getting bigger in different ways right now. So,
yes, and there is a website that I used to use in order to get work called voices.com. And it's really, really competitive. I just didn't have enough hours in the day to compete with the people who had all day in order to get onto this website. And basically an audition will come up and say, a female voice needed to say this copy, so send in your audition reel. And you would write a little proposal and say like, oh, I'll do it for this much amount of money in this file format. And then you send in your little audition reel and then you don't hear back. And you do like 10 of those a day or 20 of those a week or however many you can do. And the work coming back from doing all that audition was just such a tiny little trickle that it wasn't worth it to me to keep pushing on that when there were just so many other great voice artists that were online being able to hammer this stuff out.
Yeah, I know I've checked out sites like that, but most of the people I've ended up hiring for audio stuff has been people I've either heard their podcast or they've recommended somebody or something like that. Mm-hmm. It ended up being word of mouth more or less than anything else.
Yeah, and that's basically how I've gotten a majority of my work as well, as word of mouth, or, you know, just one of my friends on Facebook will message me and say, oh, hey, I'm doing a show. You want to be in it, basically.
One of the last things, and then I'll let you go. What am I trying to say?
Come on, spit it out.
A lot of the media seems like popular now seems to be like older media. Like you were talking about, there's radio plays coming back and podcasting is coming back. I mean, podcasting as radio, but with radio dramas. And it seems like short films or independent films are smaller. And even stage work seems, in a little way, seems to be making creaks to come back, I think, in some ways. Why do you think that is?
I think because they're are so many outlets now for people to be able to put this work out independently, or at least that's going to be my guess, that they aren't being reliant on big studios and big finances. Anybody with a USB microphone and a laptop can put out a podcast, and anybody with a little bit of space can put on a play, or, you know, even write their own material and have these little fringe things. So I think that could be the connection, or why some of these older types of entertainment and media are coming back, is because they're easy, they're entertaining, they're accessible, and you don't have to be Paramount Studios or Capitol Records in order to produce this stuff anymore.
And do you see that as a positive that so many people?
Oh yeah. Oh heck yeah. I mean, sure. It gets a little watered down maybe with people who maybe shouldn't be putting out stuff or aren't as talented, but it just gives lots of opportunity to people that, you know, you don't have to go to Hollywood anymore in order to be an actor, or you don't have to go to New York. There's lots of places now that are producing entertainment. So I think it's just providing opportunity for anybody to be able to do it. And that I think is great. And it's giving more voices to more different types of people, you know, not just mainstream white bread America. It's anybody with a voice, no matter their color or race or religion, can jump out there and start producing really good stuff that people can latch onto and enjoy.
Yeah, I agree. Like, a lot of people want to say mainstream needs to change, and I'm like, well, there's actually good content off the mainstream, too. Mainstream needs to change, but there are good things out there that needs to be promoted more and, like, pushed up that they're really good things, I think.
Yeah, I think that maybe is the hardest challenge, just because now there is so much stuff that's out there. How do then we make it promoted so that more people see it, you know, so that something goes viral or whatnot. It could be somebody that's putting out really, really great stuff, but they're in this tiny little community somewhere in Timbuktu and only a small group of people have heard of them and will ever hear of them. So that's too bad. We probably need to figure that part out a little bit. But no, I love the fact that just about any artist can put their stuff on Spotify, for instance, or I have friends who are writers and been able to put books on Amazon and print those and do ebooks and printed books. And you don't need the big publishers anymore. Anybody kind of homegrown can do it and put their stuff out there. And I think that's a pretty positive thing.
To wrap things up, is there anything you want to promote, or even if it doesn't have anything to do with you, if you want to like have people check out anything, a charity thing or anything?
Oh man, I wish I was prepared for that one. Then I could have come up with something really, really cool. The only thing that's coming up right now that I can think of that I would want people to maybe know about or check out is the Radio Enthusiasts of Puget Sound. Go see repsonline.org. We're having our big showcase in Bellevue, Washington, April 21st, 22nd, and 23rd. We're going to be honoring Beverly Washburn, who she was in the movie Old Yeller, and she was in an episode of Star Trek, actually. And that's going to be a great conference. So if people are interested in old time radio, I very much recommend coming to that, and you'll see me and you'll get to hear me perform. I don't know if we're going to have Tony Dow come to that. He hasn't committed yet, but there's going to be a lot of really great other voiceover artists at this convention. So yeah, I think that'll be the one that I decide to plug.
I'll post this tomorrow, and I'll try to put in the liner notes and stuff all that information too.
Cool.
So I have it in there. So, well, thank you for joining us and talking to us about your art and creativity.
Thank you, Brian. It was actually a pleasure. I was nervous at first about doing this, but I actually had a really good time. So, yeah, thank you for having me on your podcast. And if you want me back again, I think I could probably make that happen.
Okay. And if you ever have anything you want to talk about or promote or anything, just let me know and you can come on and promote it if you want to and stuff.
That sounds great. Thank you so much.
Cool. Thank you for being here, and I hope you have a good rest of your night.
Okay. Sounds good. Thank you so much.
Bye.
Bye.